Blowing the whistle on waste, fraud, abuse, illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety frequently carries with it the risk of personal danger. Whistleblowers are subject to retaliation, they lose their jobs, and sometimes their friends and colleagues walk away from them. In some cases, though, the whistleblower's life is in danger from the very people against whom that whistleblower has reported. Today, we'll tell you about one whistleblower whose life is literally in danger because of her brave revelations. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Patricia Mashale was a senior administrative clerk working in the police firearms department in the Free State province of South Africa. In 2018, she made a protected disclosure to her commanding officer that illegal firearms destined for destruction were being sold by police officials to criminal syndicates. Nothing came of her complaint, so she reported it to the former National Police Commissioner, General Kayla Sithole. In 2020, Sithole referred the case to the head of the Priority Crimes Division in the Free State, who appointed a task force to investigate. Soon afterwards, Mashale found out that her identity as the whistleblower had been compromised. The investigation was immediately halted. According to Mashale, it has never been revived. In January 2021, Mashale blew the whistle again. This time, she made a protected disclosure to Sithole of alleged corruption and abuse of power by senior police officials in the Free State. The information she sent to Sithole included allegations of irregular appointments and promotions and of the misuse of state resources. Rather than being acted on, Mashale's expectation of confidentiality was breached again, and her complaint found its way back to the very same provincial managers she had blown the whistle on. The officers Mashale had implicated then embarked on a terrifying campaign of retaliation against her. One of the police generals she had implicated opened a harassment case against Mashale and obtained a protective order. Police officials investigating the harassment case then seized Mashale's phone while she was at work, using what she says was a fake warrant. Patricia Mashale's phone is still in the possession of the South African Police Service. And if that wasn't enough, Mashale found herself under physical surveillance by police officers using unmarked cars. The car Mashale uses to collect her younger son from boarding school was followed all the way back to her house in November 2021. Mashale's digital communications also appear to be under surveillance. Her bank has warned her about the disclosure of her personal data. In January 2022, Mashale was charged with misconduct for bringing the police into disrepute after publicly calling for the removal of the Free State Police management. After 15 years of service, Mashale was dismissed after she refused to attend a misconduct hearing chaired by one of the police officials that she had implicated in her initial complaint. Shortly afterwards, one of her former police colleagues warned her that there were plans to have her arrested and thrown in jail without being registered on the prison system and killed. Now Patricia Mashale lives in hiding in different locations, fearing for her life. A police threat assessment confirmed her life was indeed at risk. She says in June 2022, shots were fired at her brother in an attempt to kill him after he refused to disclose her whereabouts to members of the Free State Police management. According to an SABC interview aired in September 2022, living in hiding has taken its toll on Mashale's family and their relationships. She has a 9-year-old son who she can see only occasionally now. Shortly after the interview was aired, Mashale received information that the police general with a protective order against her had given an instruction that she should be arrested. Days later, a large contingent of police arrived at her house and harassed her and her family members. This happened even though she had a prior arrangement with the investigating officer to meet him with her lawyer in his office to be charged. That was subsequently done. Threats to her life continue. Most recently, in November 2022, her son-in-law was driving her to a safe house when she noticed they were being tailed by a black Ford Ranger pickup truck without vehicle registration plates. She was convinced the occupants were assassins who had been sent to kill her. A high-speed car chase ensued. Mashale's son-in-law eventually shook off their pursuers in a warren of township streets. She regards these actions as part of an ongoing pattern of retaliation for her whistleblowing. Patricia Mashale, welcome to the show. We are very happy to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, the pleasure is ours, Patricia. I want to point out from the outset that your story is a heartbreaking one. It's one where literally everything that a whistleblower might fear has happened to you, has happened to you. Your life is in danger, your family has been threatened, and for your own safety, we don't even know what country you're in as we speak with you. Tell us how this whole thing got started, and how did it get so bad so quickly?
Definitely, John. It's like my life is a living horror on a daily basis. I reported, like you said, I reported that from 2018, the first time when I reported the sale, the unlawful smuggling of state-owned firearms from the provincial storage facilities. And my identity was then also compromised by then, and the case was never pursued. And then in 2021, I reported the corruption of the provincial subs management in Free State to the former National Commissioner General Ketla Sithole. Sithole, I made a protected disclosure to him. Before I made a disclosure, we had a conversation on the phone, and he advised me to say, you know what, make a protected disclosure, put it in writing, and email it straight to me. I did exactly that. Mm-hmm. A few days later, I was informed by a colleague that that report, that find his way back to the Free State management, and they are the very people that are implicated in that protected disclosure. And that's where everything started. From that time on, the massive retaliation started against me. And this is where we are now.
Patricia, you did everything exactly the way in which it was supposed to be done. You made a protected whistleblower disclosure through your chain of command. At what point do you think the system was corrupted? Who exposed you? And do you think that that was the plan all along?
The person who exposed me was the former national commissioner. And I believe that was the plan all along, because at the time, I didn't even know that the former national commissioner was part of the corruption reported. I only find it out in a much later state that he was actually linked to the corruption that I reported.
Unbelievable. You made several different whistleblower disclosures. Did the system ever work for you the way it was supposed to work?
The system never worked for me. The system never. I went everywhere. I knocked on every door that I could think of. Luckily, when I contacted the South African Human Rights Commission, the former chief of the Human Rights Commission, Advocate Sidiso Tipanyani, immediately assisted me. He investigated my issue and immediately certified me as a whistleblower. And I thought that will buy me immunity, but not. And Advocate Tipanyani's contract was there after his contract was terminated. His contract ended, and they refused to extend his contract. But I believe it was because gave me that whistleblower status.
As soon as you went up the chain of command, it seems that things went bad. But when did they go from bad to dangerous? What was the first thing that you noticed, and how did it go downhill from there?
It went from bad to dangerous the day that police officer came to my office to seize my phone. After that is then when I realized that I'm being censored. I realized that there's dangerous civilians on me. And on the day my children's car was followed from the boarding school up to Bloemfontein, I realized that now this is not funny anymore. The situation is now dangerous. And then in February, after I went to the police station to open a case against the Free State management, I received the information from a former colleague to tell me that he got information from a person that didn't know at a correctional facility that there is plans that the general that I implicated in this protected disclosure was going to open a criminal case against me, whereby I was going to be arrested and sent to an unknown correctional facility without being registered on the system, and I would have just vanished into the system without anyone knowing where I was. And that's when I immediately went into hiding. 2 days thereafter, the general indeed went to the police station and opened a case against me.
Tell us a little bit about the press reaction, the media reaction. It seems to me that your whistleblowing was crystal clear. Certainly the media and the South African public have to be appreciative of what it was that you were bringing to light. Or have the police been successful in keeping this out of the press?
You know what, John, there was not much media exposure, although I exposed the information in the public. I got media exposure the day after the second attempt on my life, whereby that truck was following us. After that day, I decided that I'm going to pen an open letter to the president of the country, and I'm going to put everything out there that should anything happens to me, that he should be held responsible for my death, because I've knocked on his office door as a last resort, and I never got any response. I indeed got response from his PA, who referred me back to the police minister, whom I also implicated in the corruption. So I've written numerous emails to his office. His PA kept on referring me back, and that's the day I decided I'm going to pen an open letter to him to get the attention. And it's from that day on, that's when I started to get media attention.
And what about people in the legal profession? This seems like a natural case around which lawyers would want to rally just for the sake of protecting the rule of law. Have you had much in the way of support from attorneys around South Africa?
No. No, I haven't had much assistance from attorneys. The only assistance that I got is from my whistleblower groups, and some of the attorneys who gave me some advice. But as attorney that came to me and say, you know what, I'm going to represent you in this, I haven't received such offers.
Well, we know that you have been honored recently with a whistleblowing prize from the Australian NGO Blueprint for Free Speech. Blueprint is one of the biggest, one of the most important whistleblowers internationally, anywhere. Has that helped you in any way? Has it helped to get your story out there for the general public to read and to appreciate?
Yes, definitely. It definitely helped me, assisted me to get my story out there, but it didn't assist me with a government who was supposed to protect me. Mm-hmm. I haven't received anything, any communication. I even tried to reach out to the deputy, a recently elected deputy president of the ANC, who's probably going to become the next deputy president. I tried to reach out to him, and I didn't get much assistance from him.
We're speaking with South African police whistleblower Patricia Mashale about her odyssey as a whistleblower. We have a lot more questions for her, so stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break.
Some nations may be able to turn a blind eye to atrocities in other countries. The United States of America is different. Wherever people long to be free, they will find a friend in the United States.
dentro la primavera araba e le varie rivolte nei vari paesi si sono inseriti i giochi delle grandi potenze, dei servizi segreti.
Color revolutions is one among several means to reach the goal of conquering foreign lands and bringing them under the helm of US Western economic interests.
Si può pensare ad un'architettura globale di democrazia.
Le rivoluzioni colorate sono un tassello del soft power americano.
The final goal of these theme revolutions is to ensure that there are no independent players in the world anymore.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Здесь земля отверженных. Нам уже от нее не деться. Ветер степной пахнет смертью, мятой и медом. Мы пьем за любовь, за правду, за наше счастливое детство. Пьем, не чокаясь, из гильз от гранатомета.
Вся русская литература – это война. Поэзия там, где больно.
Победим, у нас нет других вариантов. Иначе эта вся свора размотает нас на тряпки. Так что нам придется побеждать.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with South African police whistleblower Patricia Mashale. Patricia, it's good to have you with us. What can you tell us about the response? We were talking about this just before the break. What can you tell us about the response to your whistleblowing from the central government? You've encountered nothing but trouble in Free State, but what about in the capital? Have you received any support? Any parliamentarians, for example? Anybody in the capital who has rallied to your side?
No, not at all. Instead, I'm receiving a lot of resistance. I've recently made a request to the Police Portfolio Committee of Parliament to make a representation to them regarding my situation. And they are well aware that there was a threat assessment done on my life, and it was rejected by the SAPS management. And the chairperson of the portfolio committee rejected the threat assessment based on the fact that she was told by the South African management that the threat assessment was not in the correct format, that a risk assessment should have been done. The crime intelligence officer who did the risk assessment informed the threat assessment, informed them that doing a risk assessment is going to threaten my life more, because a risk assessment is an in-depth assessment whereby they must know my whereabouts, they must know my family's whereabouts, they must know everything about me, that. And I told them that since I'm already in hiding and since there have been already attempts on my life, he cannot do a risk assessment. Hence, the threat assessment was done on their request, because they wanted the threat assessment. Once the threat assessment was submitted to them, they changed and say no, they don't want the threat assessment anymore. They now want the risk assessment.
But there's just no good news in this experience. Everything that a whistleblower would hope would not happen has happened to you. Lately, you've been placed in personal danger because of your whistleblowing. Even your life and the lives of your family members have been placed in danger. How are you dealing with that? Obviously, you can't live under these conditions over the long term. What are you hoping for here?
You know what, John, it's very, very difficult to live like this.
Yeah.
Being a whistleblower in South Africa is like signing a death sentence. I'm sure you've read the stories, you've heard that almost all the whistleblowers who came out publicly to blow the whistle has been killed. And the reason I believe I'm still alive is because I refuse to get protection from the state, to be put in whistle in state protection. Because that is the moment that you are going can I also just be being put in whistleblower protection in South Africa is like you handing your life over to them on a silver platter.
Yes.
And I believe the reason why I'm still alive is because I refuse to be put in whistleblower protection, because the very people who are supposed to protect you is the people who are responsible for all the killings. And I know that for a fact. I have evidence to attest to it.
Patricia, after I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program, I was arrested and charged under the Espionage Act, and I ended up spending 23 months in prison here in the United States. But my whistleblowing was accompanied by great support, widespread support in the legal community and among international whistleblower organizations. Even many in the media rallied to my side. Tell us a little bit about your support and where it's coming from. I don't want to believe, like, my brain doesn't want to process that everybody has walked away from you. Have you received any amount of support anywhere else in South African society?
Yes, the support that I received in the society is in the form of my whistleblower support groups. In
Great.
Those support groups are the state capture whistleblowers. There are some psychologists, there are social workers like John Clark. There are human rights activists like Mary De Haas. And there are a few people who really, really supported me through this. If not for them, I don't know. And even PLAF, I received some funds from PLAF, support grants to pay for my accommodation. Mm-hmm. Frontline defenders also, I received some funds from them to pay for my accommodation. But you know, most of these funds are only a once off. So most of the time, I'm penniless. I don't even know most of the times where is the next month's rent going to come from. But yes, I up to so far, with the help of all the other whistleblowers, I managed to keep it together.
Well, you raise a very important point there. This is something that I've read about and people have told me about for years, that it's a consistent theme through modern history for whistleblowers, that once they make their disclosures, they never make a financial comeback. This is a big problem with whistleblowing, because, you know, without whistleblowers, who's going to watch government, for example? Who's going to hold people accountable for their actions? I'm curious as to whether or not you've had any support from former colleagues, from family members, from friends. Has anybody reached out to help you get through this experience?
Yes, I have, from former colleagues, yes, like that moral support, the family moral support, the crime intelligence officer who are there for physical protection and support. Although he was actually charged departmentally for protecting me in terms of his functions, But he just kept on telling them that until you dismiss me, I'm going to go on protecting her because that's part of my job. Mm-hmm. He was charged departmentally because he even refused to change the contents of the threat assessment on their instruction, and he was found not guilty in the trial. So yes, he is there for me on a daily basis. If I have to go somewhere like next week, Tuesday, I must go to court for the harassment charges against me. He will be there with me all the way, making sure that there's no threat around me and, mm-hmm. and yeah, things like that.
I know that it feels like you have the weight of the entire South African government falling on your head right now. Certainly that's how I felt when I was arrested. But tell us about your family, about your children and your brother. How are your family members taking all of this pressure?
You know what, John, is very, very difficult, especially for my youngest son. He is now 11 years old. Remember last year I went in hiding February 2022. Mm-hmm. And he had to manage that entire year without me. While he was so used to me, I used to do everything for him, help him with his homework. I mean, he was 10 years old at the time. And my other daughter is in university. She must manage on her own. My family, let me say, this whole saga actually destroyed my family, mm-hmm. because there is no family life. My children's rights has been infringed, because in terms of the Children's Act, my children also have the basic rights of being protected by their parents. My children must now grow up without a mother, and we don't know for how long is this going to keep on. And in terms of the gender-based violence, I believe that the government is committing a huge gender-based violence against me as a woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a woman, and the government is not protecting me. Instead, the government are the ones who are retaliating against me. So yes, my family is destroyed, because no family will survive through something like this.
You're absolutely right. Patricia Mashale, you are a role model. Thank you so much for joining us. We wish you the very best of luck. Thucydides, the great Greek historian, said, "The bravest are surely those who have the clearest vision of what is before them, glory and danger alike, and yet, notwithstanding, go out and meet it." That is what Patricia Mashale did. We need more whistleblowers like her. I'd like to thank our guest, Patricia Mashale, for joining us, and thanks to our viewers for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.